You are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I am your host, Erin O'Sullivan. Today we are talking about vegan entrepreneurs. So just last night, I was talking to a vegan friend about the conflicts of conscience that most vegans must face in the workplace. That is, except for those few of us who work for an animal charity or something like that, most of us are required to participate in, or at least keep our mouths shut about, the animal exploitation that is either directly part of, or at least peripheral to, our jobs. So whether you work at a restaurant having to serve up burgers with a smile, or a lawyer who gets assigned a case defending the beef industry, haven't all us vegans dreamed about having a vegan job or even our own vegan business? So to get the ball rolling on the question of vegan entrepreneurs and vegan businesses, we are going to talk to Stephanie Redcross, founder of a company called Vegan Mainstream. And it's, I guess, what you'd call a meta-vegan business, and that is a vegan business that assists vegan businesses. So Stephanie, welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me today. I'm really excited about chit-chatting.
So I guess we'll just start off asking you to tell us your story. So who are you? Where do you come from? And how did you come to found Vegan Mainstream?
Well, as far as who I am, as you said, Stephanie Redcross, I have been vegan since 2005, so a good amount of time now. And where I came about kind of with Vegan Mainstream and why I do kind of what I do was I had worked in corporate America for years, almost about 9 years before I started Vegan Mainstream, and I loved what I did. I love marketing. I've loved it for years. I've done marketing for about maybe 13, 14 years now, and I also love being a vegan. I love being passionate about it, but what I struggled with, and kind of about the same thing in your intro, was could I bring those two things together? Could I bring the things that I love together and be able to do marketing, but also do something that kind of pushes the movement forward, something that kind of surrounds me with people that are like-minded and have similar interests as me? And that's when I was thinking, okay, what if I started a business? What if what my career was, could I align it with my passion? And not just my passion for veganism, but my passion for animals, my passion for the earth, all the things that I really feel that are important, and not just important, but things that I think help educate and help others is what I wanted to do. And specifically, I wanted to help businesses. What I found is all of us have probably experienced this, where we have our favorite restaurant, our favorite store, we've loved them, we patroned them for years, and then all of a sudden they go out of business out of the blue. I don't know, Erin, have you ever experienced that where you're like, oh, my favorite business just went out of business, or they moved, or something happened?
Oh, yeah, funny you should mention this. A great vegan business that was in Montreal just went out of business. And then not a couple days ago, this wasn't a vegan restaurant, but they did serve up a vegan brunch item that all the vegans in town loved. And yeah, just a couple days ago, went belly up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's almost like a shock to your system, especially as a vegan. And like, we always love when we find like that place that offers vegan options, or that vegan restaurant that we absolutely love, and many of them go out of business. I mean, there's many reasons why companies kind of go out of business or don't make it, but a lot of times it's because the individual that's running or managing the business is great at what they do. They're an amazing chef, but they're not an amazing marketer. They're not a great accountant. They're not great at inventory management, or they've never really set up a website before. So all of the things that kind of are required as an entrepreneur or as required as running a business, they don't always have those skill sets. So what I figured, or what I was hoping to do from our standpoint with Vegan Mainstream, kind of being that marketing arm for them, is to say, be great at what you do, but what can we do to help you become good at or leverage us to be great at marketing? What can we do to help fill those gaps? Or what can we do so we can train you so that, yeah, you may not be into email marketing. Maybe you've heard about social media, or, you know, your friend, your cousin, or your kid uses it. But let's talk about how you can use it for your business so that you can stay in business, so that you can flourish, so that you can be sustainable. And that's kind of what the reason why I started Vegan Mainstream. And from there, it's kind of bloomed into what we are today.
So what are you today? I guess the more direct question is, what services does your company offer?
We do a lot of things, but the probably two main things that we help people with is either one-on-one consulting, And this works really well because a lot of people are more small businesses. You know, they're 2 employees, 5 employees, maybe even 30 employees, but they may be, you know, majority of the employees on the manufacturing side. So like office employees, only a few. So what we'll do is if you have a problem, if you have a challenge, if you're having something you're trying to overcome and you need that advice, then we'll get on the phone, do a 1-hour session, or we'll meet every other week, or we'll meet once a month, whatever the right frequency is, and we'll actually kind of navigate you through the challenges, but also navigate you through some of the successes, because sometimes success can bring more opportunity, and sometimes you need to know how to manage that, who to hire, and so forth.
With respect to your services, what you've described so far seems like pretty general business consulting. Is there anything specific about your services that make them particularly relevant to vegan businesses?
Absolutely. And I'd probably say two things. The other one of our main services is a marketing plan. And the reason why this becomes not just marketing is we take into consideration the challenges that vegan businesses face. Because vegan businesses, think of it as kind of like an industry in a sense. When you think of a business that serves the sport industry, it has very specific things. Yes, we can do social media. Yes, we can use similar tools. But how we do it, how we communicate it, and also what's important and what we do and will not do, those kind of boundaries make a difference for those industries. So if you're in the sports industry or in the healthcare industry, what I try to tell people is think about it as kind of like the vegan industry in a sense. And from an ethical standpoint, there are certain types of marketing techniques we will not do and we will not promote, and we will actually try to deter people from doing. We'll talk about messaging and how do you want messaging. A lot of companies, especially vegan and veg businesses, struggle with when do you see vegetarian versus vegan, how much should your name your business say vegan in it, and things like that that are very specific to what we do. Also, the activist side of things is something that comes up very specifically in vegan and veg businesses that you don't always see in other businesses. And I can say that because I've been on the other side. I've worked, like I said, in corporate America. You know, I worked in international programs, and we worked in domestic, I worked in financial services, credit cards, I mean, products, all types of stuff. So I've seen some of those differences. And what I see on the vegan and veg side is when you think about the activist side, because many people who own businesses or running businesses are still passionate. They may want to go out and protest A, B, and C. They may want to support their favorite organization, like Compassion Over Killing or someone like that. And all of those components are things that I find are more unique to vegans. And those are the things that when we're putting together like marketing plans, and even sometimes on the consulting side, we'll specifically discuss and say, how does that affect or how does that enhance what you would be doing from a day-to-day marketing standpoint? Is that clear or is that?
Actually, I have a couple of follow-ups to what you were saying. You mentioned that there were certain techniques that you didn't advocate and would actually suggest people don't do. So can you give a couple examples of that? And the other one was you were talking about activism and how a certain person running a business might also want to work with a certain cause or a certain group. Can you elaborate on what you mean by that? Like, is that something that you think is a good idea, or is that something that you think that maybe business owners should step back from being very active at protests and stuff like that?
Yeah, let's talk about that one first, and then I'll jump to the other one as well. From an activist standpoint, it's just like anything. You have to make a strategic decision from a business standpoint. So for some people, it works great, and for others, it can be challenging because you're mixing sometimes your personal and your professional. As individuals, we may love to volunteer, we may love to do all types of things, but it's a very different discussion when you want to say, I just went to XYZ's rally or protest this weekend, do I post that on my Facebook page for my business? And that's why we need to have that discussion to say, well, are you ready to align your brand, your business, and what you do with that organization? Because what happens is there's a lot of association that can happen between how people feel about association A, B, and C and how they feel about your business. In every organization, every business, people have emotional ties to them. So some they love, some they hate. So you shouldn't be afraid of aligning yourself with any organization, but you do want to make sure you make that strategic decision to say, who do I want to align myself? Are their goals and their interests the same as I have, and that from my business standpoint are the same, as opposed to, you know, I'll go to in some organizations maybe protest because of the specific topic, but the organization as a whole, I may not love everything they do. And that's where I'm kind of making the distinction, is you really want to think about what organizations you want to align yourself with and align with your goals, so that when there is the positive and maybe sometimes the negative of that decision, you're ready to handle it because you didn't make a naive decision. You made a decision strategically to say, I believe in this, and this is why I believe in it. So if any of your customers, any of your followers, or any of those individuals question it, you'll be able to respond to it and answer it because in advance you made that decision and you know why and you're able to communicate why. That's something you really have to make a decision about. And not to say that people in the non-vegan world don't have to make those similar decisions. A lot of this happens in like the green and eco space. And the same thing can even happen on the vegan side. When you think about sustainability, you may want to offer vegan products like belts and shoes, but a lot of questions come up on the eco side of things of, are your products sustainable? Are you shipping in everything from overseas, or do you manufacture things in the U.S.? But I find that there's a lot more social issues and things to consider in your business on the vegan and veg side than are traditionally done on the other side. It doesn't mean that those businesses shouldn't maybe put on a little bit of an ethical hat every now and then, mm-hmm. but I think we tend to aspire to be better, aspire to continue to improve, and because of that, it requires us to think a little bit more strategically, and also because a lot of our followers, our friends, our customers are also change agents too, so that when new things are discovered and new things come about, we sometimes have to reassess and decide, do we need to take a slightly different approach or slightly different opinion on things, because we're, I don't want to say trendsetters because it's not something trendy, trailblazers is a better word. And because we're trailblazers, that means we have to be nimble enough to know that we may have to rechart our path or potentially reconfirm our strategy as a business as we evolve.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what my first question was. Oh, yeah, it was the examples of practices that you don't advise in terms of marketing.
Yeah. A couple of things that I would say can be troublesome as far as marketing is how controversial you'd like to be. As a journalist, as even a potential blogger, a lot of times we're willing to tackle issues and tackle things where we want to create a lot of discussion and a lot of debate. But as a business owner, it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't want to be a part of the debate and a part of the discussion. It's just that we want to be careful of understanding the repercussions of, you know, sticking your finger in someone's eye. Because as a business, you're not just responsible for you, you're responsible for what your brand does, your employees do. And because of that, I caution people on how much do you want to be the whistleblower for someone else, and how much do you want to be known as that, unless that is your business, unless that is exactly what you do. And I think sometimes we can confuse what we may do as an individual, maybe as a whistleblower, we want to go in and do some investigating or some footage or something like that. And if your business is selling shoes, then you want to be careful of how much discussion you're having about maybe the milk industry. And it doesn't mean that it's not good dialogue and good conversation to have. It's just that for your audience and your customers, you might be running a little bit too far away from their initial message and what their interest is, that you'll start a discussion, a debate, an activity like on your Facebook page that may not be relevant to what you do. And also, what I find people really make a mistake is it's not their area of expertise, meaning I know marketing. I love marketing. I can have a really good discussion about marketing, but I'm not a nutritionist. So I can tell someone what I do. I can tell someone what I read. But if I start to have a heavy-duty nutrition-based discussion on our Facebook page, I have to be very careful because that's not my expertise. And if I go too far out and I start telling people how and what they should do and why they didn't, and I start to put myself in that role, I start to put on a hat that I really don't have the background for, I can open myself up for controversy, open myself up for things that, while I meant well, and I probably, if I was having a discussion with my girlfriend, you know, I may tell my girlfriend, are you crazy? You need to do this. But online, as a business owner, you're representing the business, not yourself, and you have to understand what that means and the difference between representing a business as a whole versus representing what Stephanie says, you know, to her friends when we're all sitting around and talking. I'm not recommending having a two-faced personality because you got to be consistent. You got to be who you are. But I'm also ensuring that you don't have conversations or don't jump into areas that you're not truly an expert in and open yourself up to dialogue, conversation, controversy that's just way off the topic.
So it sounds to me kind of like you're saying that if a person is thinking about becoming a vegan entrepreneur, they better do a bit of soul searching and figure out, can they keep a lid on their opinions that are not relevant to their business because that could hurt their business? Or if they can't keep a lid on their opinions, they should go into a line of business that perhaps is relevant. For example, animal rights t-shirt sales, where it's all about being controversial and being outspoken.
Absolutely. That's the big first decision. And that's the kind of conversation that I have with a lot of people who are starting businesses. And we haven't even gotten into the huge marketing aspect of it yet. But, like, it starts there. Because once you've decided, yep, I'm going to go into, like you said, animal rights t-shirts because this is my passion, this is what I talk about, and this is where my expertise lies, then we can roll into a very healthy marketing discussion because your passion, your expertise, and your business are aligned now.
But I find that that whole issue of having to keep your mouth shut on issues that aren't relevant to the business at hand, that's something that applies to pretty much everybody. As I was talking about in the introduction, most of us work in mainstream economy, and we do have to interact with people in ways where we have the opportunity to express our opinions on animal issues daily, and yet we don't because we know that it would be a career limiting, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. But one thing I was going to throw into that I think people forget is just like anything, there's a time and a place. It's just like if you have to have a conversation with someone in your family, you have to have a conversation with one of your girlfriends or your friends or even your spouse. There's a time and place for certain conversations. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't have them. I think you have to find the right forum to have them in. I think you have to make sure that you understand the audience. And it's very different when you're having a conversation with a colleague, when you're having a discussion with your boss, versus when you are posting it in social media land, when you're putting it on a blog, because not only is it heavily documented, it's now shared, and you're not really having a one-to-one conversation. You know, it's like standing up in the town center and picking up a mic and just screaming it at the top of your lungs. So it's a very different channel, and you want to make sure that your message links with that channel, not just so you don't get in trouble, but it's also the most effective medium. Because if you jump into a medium and you jump into an area where you're creating controversy that's just for controversy's sake, in a sense, it doesn't necessarily mean it brings the movement forward. I mean, you can also create a negative effect, and you want to make sure that you're also being constructive. You're also being impactful. And so I want to make sure I stress that, because it's not about, you know, shutting up and not saying what's important. It's making sure that you're using the right channels to do it and also using a good medium so that you can drive the change you want to change, as opposed to just producing noise out there.
So what kind of businesses do you guys service?
It's actually interesting. We service a ton of businesses and really kind of the gamut. We do work with a lot of cookbook authors and even kind of health authors as well. That's a really great area for us because we work with a lot of people kind of one-on-one, and a lot of them end up having a brand. So not only do they have the book, they have classes, they have a website, they may be doing video. We also work with manufacturing companies, so companies that make anything from food product all the way to skincare products, belts, shoes, really kind of the gamut. We also work with a lot of retail companies. We had a couple of kinds that we did that were more kind of brick and mortar retail as well, but more and more people are moving to the online model. We work with travel companies. It's really kind of interesting. What's been exciting for me is working at Vegan Mainstream is the amount of businesses that are out there from a vegan standpoint. I think we think of food right away when we think about vegan businesses, and we think about restaurants, but there are so many different individuals out there, so therefore they yield things like vegan jewelry. And while you don't think of jewelry as necessarily vegan in a sense, because it's not food, a lot of the products that are used sometimes in jewelry And also, it's also still the ethical piece of it, of, well, how is the jewelry made? How is it brought over? Is it made here in the U.S.? Is it assembled in the U.S.? And a lot of that comes up. So we've been pretty fortunate to really work with a large range of individuals and businesses.
We all know that vegan has a variety of definitions depending on who you talk to. And then ethical does as well, and you've brought up different aspects of ethical production, such as where the item is made. So do you have any standards in your own business where you're like, if you want us to represent you and you're calling yourself vegan, then you have to be X, Y, and Z, or in order for us to consider you ethical, you have to be X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is we always default to veganism from the standpoint of animal products. So ensuring that we only work with people who aren't using any animal products in anything that they're doing, their products and their promotions and so forth. Now, we have worked with some companies that are companies that are trying to offer more vegan options. And this has been one that's kind of, I don't know, a little bit controversial, I think, for us and others. So it'd be interesting as people listen to this what their thoughts are. But what we've strived to do is make veganism more accessible. My vision is that when you go to a city, you would have vegan malls, and it not necessarily be a vegan mall. It would be the regular mall with a ton of vegan stores in there, or even many of the stores that we go into, there would be vegan alternative products or products that service the vegan market. So we try to work with people that may have a product that they're coming out with, and they want to make sure it's vegan. They want to make sure it serves the vegan kind of society. And what we'll do is we'll work with them, A, if we first we understand what the product is, and then B, we try to make sure that as long as the people who are working on the campaign and the product itself is truly vegan, because there have been some questions about making sure all the products and everything that are derived from these products are truly vegan.
Have you found any difficulty dealing with the non-vegan businesses in trying to emphasize to them, A, what vegan means, and B, how important it is that when they say it's vegan, it actually is? And I'm going to give you a little story. This was a fun example. A friend of mine bought these truffles over some online campaign that was promoting vegan items, and they were labeled vegan. Mm-hmm. But when she got them, they had this white chocolatey pattern on top, and my friend suspected that they may contain dairy. So she contacted the people that had sent her the things, and they were like, no, they're absolutely vegan. The company says so. And she still didn't trust it. So eventually she, after much sleuthing, got the company to say that yes, indeed, the chocolate pattern did contain dairy, but that the chocolates should be regarded as predominantly vegan. So have you ever had that kind of issue, like getting through to non-vegan companies that there's no such thing as predominantly vegan?
Fortunately, we haven't worked with anyone we had to have that discussion with. I'm so happy and so thankful for that. And what's been really good is most of the companies that we work with, we either work with them to get the certification, you know, for vegan, whether it's the U.S. certification or the one from the U.K., so that's another great way that we have either worked with them or helped them kind of ensure that their products are truly vegan, because they have to go through that actual certification process. But it is interesting how when working with non-vegans that are offering vegan products, or when the team is a mix of either vegans and non-vegans who are making the product, is the importance of what it means to be vegan and, you know, showing respect for it. I think that piece is something that we really still have to work on. You know, I'm still very, I do marketing and all this like that. I'm still a little bit protective of veganism. And while I want the big stores and the corporations and everyone to have a vegan option, at the same time, I don't want them to take advantage of it. I don't want them to see it as, oh, it's just another great target market. Mm-hmm. So we try to make sure we work with people to help them understand what it is. But a lot of times what I even talk about, like I do free webinars once a month, and like the probably biggest thing that I sound probably like a broken record is I'm always talking about how it's important to be active in the community. And that's why I tell a lot of the companies that are thinking about doing products or launching vegan products, I say be active in the community. Get to know people. Jump on blogs. Jump in forums. Do things so you are a part of the people that you want to service. And even I say that for vegans sometimes, because vegans are scared to do that. They get so caught up in their business and their work and everything that's happening in their lives, and they're not social enough. They're not spending time with the people that they want to service, as well as it's easy to get behind the curve because anyways, tons of stereotypes about being vegan and what vegan means and so forth. And that's changing so fast. Even, what was it, a week ago, where Vogue Couture was featured on CNN for Fashion Week.
Cool.
It was on their website, on the homepage, everything. And not only being on CNN, but being Fashion Week in a completely vegan line, I mean, that is so much progress. And not to say we don't have a lot more to do, is you want to make sure that whether you're vegan or non-vegan, you understand how the movement is progressing to make sure that when you're talking to people and you're interacting with people, you're interacting with them in 2013, like not what life used to be in 2010, because it's very different. And you can miss the mark from a marketing standpoint. And being out of touch is just not good. So that's what I try to do, especially with the non-vegans, is help them kind of get closer to it. And it's amazing because so many of them get excited. Like, they'll start making vegan foods. They'll start doing things because they're starting to understand why. I mean, not all of them are just going to go vegan, but a lot of them start to understand why this is so important and stop looking at us as just a market and start to understand why we're passionate about what we do. And as you can probably hear, I'm passionate about what I do as well.
I just wanted to zip back 1 second to when you were saying that people should interact with the veganism of today and not the veganism of a couple decades ago. Now, it sounded like there was probably a couple of stories behind that. Could you elaborate on that a bit?
I will try. I want to protect the names of people. But I think a lot of times people see veganism, especially in a couple of different buckets, they see veganism as college students, hippie, you know, the kind of fringe of society. And I think one thing about, and that's why we didn't name the company Vegan Mainstream, is that veganism is becoming more and more mainstream. And as it does, that people start to realize that we're in all walks of life. Like, they're vegan executives, they're vegan CEOs, they're vegan teachers, they're vegan bus drivers, you know. And as we start to realize that, then we can better serve them. I think a lot of times it's easy to put vegans kind of in a box and think that they don't require or don't want the same things other people. So let's use an example, like skincare products, as an example. The reason I use skincare is a very common one where people may start doing, you know, homemade skincare in their home, but when they want to go to that marketing and that bigger level, they have to make a transition. Now, a lot of that has to do with product packaging. A lot of it has to do with your website. Like, it's great to be homemade, but it shouldn't look like you really did it in your garage. And I think that's where people miss it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing it in your garage. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, most manufacturing plants are not pretty at all. And I'm not saying that, you know, it has to be this glamorous place inside, but, you know, the labels have to look like they've been printed. And, you know, if someone touches them with their hands, the color is not going to come off on their hands. When a person receives the package in the mail, the bottles don't open. They don't receive the package in the mail. And, you know, there's no mention of the product. There's no postcard. There's no phone number. There's no website. There's no way for them to even get back to you. When you think about making homemade products, while it's great that they're made by hand, and what's really nice about, especially homemade skincare products, a lot of times is they use a lot of simple ingredients, so they don't have a lot of that, you know, those like 10-syllable words in there that we all can't pronounce. But because they're made by hands, there tends to be variation. And if there is variation, let people know there's variation. I think a lot of times people get nervous and get worried, and there's nothing wrong with it because a lot of natural products, because we're getting them in society, and when you get certain ingredients in the summertime, they're very different when you get certain ingredients in the wintertime. You live in certain temperatures. Things change because of it. I mean, some of the stuff is just pure chemistry. And I think a lot of times when people are managing their business or thinking about their small business, they forget that you have to communicate that you have to work on your packaging, that when someone's buying your product, or if you're going to start putting your product in local stores and all that good stuff, they're going to look at your product and compare it to the product next to it. Now, you're not trying to beat out the big names, but what you do want to make sure is that if you went to a natural food store, if you even went to Whole Foods as an example, if your product was sitting on the shelf next to that person, is it appealing? Is it look competitive? Is it something that if you were there and someone went for an instant purchase, would it be something someone would grab? And I think from a marketing standpoint, we forget about that. We forget about that experience that customer has because we get all wrapped up into we're making this cool product from our hands in our garage, and it's awesome that I have a business, but you got to remember, you got to take it to that next level, and you have to communicate. People have to know. You got to do email marketing. You got to do social media, even if you hate it. It's about your customers have to know who you are, what you do, why you do what you do, and they can't know it if you're hiding in your garage just making the product.
Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit about what the customer is looking for when they are going into a store and thinking, okay, well, here's this vegan product and here's this product that it's standing beside, and how the customer makes the decision on what to buy. Are you aware, like, do you know much about the marketing research that's been done on vegan and, say, ethical consumers? And if you do, can you give us a bit of background on it?
I haven't seen much that talks about consumer behavior. I see much more that talks about it from an animal rights standpoint, from a health standpoint. Absolutely. There's a great company. It's called Humane Research. It does some great research, much more on the animal rights side of things and so forth. But even on the marketing kind of business side, we just haven't seen enough strong reports that bring the consumer piece to it. They'll talk about, you know, what less vegetarians do, or what people who are doing the Meatless Monday and some of those general behaviors, but not anything that, well, we've seen, especially a really good published report that actually says these are the buying behaviors and these are why. Have you seen anything specific or...
Well, not too much that's vegan specific, but I have seen a lot to do with ethical consumerism. And they talk about things like when you do a survey of these ethical consumers, something like 40% of them will say that they will consume ethically, or they will only buy products with a certain certification or something like that. But then when you actually see their behaviors, it's something like 3% will actually execute those behaviors. And the defining features were things like convenience and look and all of these sorts of things that you were talking about, the things that, you know, maybe as ethical consumers, we like to think of ourselves as above, but these things really do play into our purchasing decisions.
Absolutely. The thing we've always struggled with, especially for the market research, is how much do you isolate the vegan piece? Because while I'm, you know, true blue vegan, I'm also other things. Like, there's other things I'm interested in, other things I'm also passionate about. So when I'm making a purchasing decision, I'm making it as a vegan, but I'm also making it as a person who responds well to certain types of companies. We were joking the other day, I was at the outlet mall, and there were a couple of brands that I don't purchase because they have made some racial statements. And I'm African American, so for me, I just won't patron those companies. But that's something that's another layer to me because I'm African-American, because I'm female. So I think a lot of times we forget that people have these multiple layers. I mean, sometimes you can have a conflict between them, but I more want people to think about from a business standpoint and also from a marketing standpoint is that you have to appeal to people on multiple levels. Like, we're moving away, I think, in veganism, and especially from a business standpoint, where people buy the product just because it's vegan. I think a lot of times people are starting to want more from their vegan businesses. They're going to want more from their vegan products. So they not only want it to be vegan, but then they're questioning, well, is it healthy and vegan? Does it use sustainable products? I want it to be vegan, but is it made for African-American hair, you know, as an example? And I think as business owners, we got to make sure that we make those additional connections with our audience, because we're whole people. We're not just slivers of individuals.
Yeah. But then you have the flip side of things, where when you're in a small market, like a vegan market, or say the more general ecologically friendly market, you find that people often make the error of trying to cover off too many niche markets and actually not serving any of them. Like, one thing that kills me is how many vegans get irritated when everything is vegan and gluten free. Because they're trying to cover off two markets, right? They're trying to cover off the vegan and the gluten-free market. But meanwhile, a lot of vegans don't like things if they're gluten-free. So you can make a misstep when you try to cover off too many markets as well at once.
Absolutely. And even from everything, I think a lot of times people are like, well, my product, I want everyone to buy it. And I'm like, well, you can't have the whole world, because there's different segments in the entire world. So I'm glad you made that point, because it is easy to also try to do too much and to try to satisfy too many people at a time. So the question is, what's the right balance? And some of that is, that's what, you know, makes some business successful and some business aren't. So there's no, like, secret recipe weapon out there that you can say, if you surefire do this type of business in this type of way and only do it this way, it's going to work this way. You really can't do that. Like, what we do even in our, like, consults and our one-on-ones is I teach people that you have to do testing. You have to ask people, what are they interested in? What do you think? And not just survey types of testing. Is you may have to do some test markets. I mean, plenty of businesses do that. Earth Balance, when they originally came up with the idea of doing soy milk, where Earth Balance is known for butter, completely different product, different location in the case, different packaging. I mean, all of those were things that they had to consider. And while we didn't work on the campaign, I just remember talking to them about it when they were initially launching it a couple years ago, is they had to do a test. They put it in Whole Foods. They wanted to see how it was going to sell. They created a partnership, and they actually created a campaign out of it. And I think we forget from a business standpoint that if you're launching a new product or launching a new concept, you know, start with one or two, try to make them successful, maybe market it different ways, use different things. Facebook isn't going to work for everything. Some things work better on Pinterest. Some things work better in email marketing. And get into that idea that it's fluid. It's interactive. And I think that's what I like about marketing, is it does have that fluid piece to it. But I know for a lot of people it's frustrating because you want to make it like a recipe. You want to be able to say, you know, 2 cups of Facebook, 3 tablespoons of this, put this all in, I'm going to have this great, you know, marketing pie. And it doesn't really work like that. And I think getting people to kind of understand that and getting comfortable with that is really a challenge.
So let's talk a little bit about supply and demand in this market. What is the situation demand-wise for vegan products and services? And by that I mean, A, how many customers are we looking at? B, are those potential customers vegan, or are they potential vegan, or are they just anybody? And what products and services do people want? Like, I know that, as you were saying earlier, the focus seems to be on food and, I guess, to another extent, on personal care products. But is there any other market for vegan products or services?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about the market you can go after, I mean, you have the vegan market, and there are numbers that have come out, you know, that range anywhere from 3 to 5% of the population that classifies themselves as vegan. Now, the challenge with that number is that is on a very grand level. You know, that's not the number of vegans in LA. That's not the number of vegans. You know, each city kind of is going to have a different mix and different numbers. And we've done some estimates, and you know, you can do your standard deviation and all that stuff to try to kind of figure it out. But what I find, or what I talk to businesses about, is unless you have a lot of capital, it's very difficult for a small business to launch nationwide. So when you think about those, like, big numbers, and, like, I talked about vegan and veg, but there's people that are considered, you know, less meatitarians. There are people that eat meat twice a week. You have a whole big, you know, Meatless Monday movement. So that creates a huge potential audience for vegan products. So when I think when people think of who to target, don't just think of vegan. So what I do for a lot of people, when I put it into perspective, I say, think about the standard family type of situation where if one person's vegan in the family, what that means is anyone else in the family could be a target as well, because if they're buying for that individual, so if the daughter's vegan and the mother's not vegan, but she's going to buy products for her daughter, she's a potential target for you, even though she doesn't classify herself as vegan. And I think when I have those types of discussions with people, a light bulb starts to go off, and they start to realize that your target market is not just the people who wear a vegan T-shirt. They are the people who buy for themselves and buy vegan for other people. But I think as far as products, I take vegan just like any other industry or any other group of people. We really need support on every aspect. So you're going to think about vegans in the music industry. We've talked about cookbook authors, but a lot of times people forget about novelists. You forget about people who are writing books that are not necessarily where they're teaching people how to be vegan, but they're going to have characters in it that are vegan. They're going to have discussion points in there talking about veganism and so forth. So veganism is almost like its own segment of the population that needs the same type of support system that any other group would need. You know, if you think of females as a target market, then what do females need? The same thing happens in veganism, and that's where I kind of get people to start. So when you think about products, you also want to think about services. I mean, many vegan businesses need accountants, and I think people forget about that. Now, while you could have any accountant technically chew the numbers, what's really important, I find, about finding someone who is either vegan or veg or understands the movement and working with them as far as their services, is they understand why you do what you do. Why are you investing in certain things that maybe other businesses will not? And I'll give you an example on the food side, and then we can apply it to another business. But I was talking with someone who had a great product, a great dessert item. And what she struggled with is, as she started to work with other chefs, as she started to work with manufacturing companies, packaging companies, and so forth, they kept telling her to use different products to cut costs. And while from a business standpoint, you always have to look at your costs to, you know, ensure that you're making enough revenue to stay in business, but their recommendations for the products that they were saying were maybe less healthy products. They were products that were compromising from an ethical standpoint what she wanted her business to stand for, because their goal was the traditional idea of, we're just looking at the bottom line. We're looking at those bottom numbers, and if you want to get your profit up, then you go for these types of products because they're cheaper, because they're readily available in the market, because they're subsidized by the government, A, B, and C. And I think as a business owner, we have to make sure we surround ourselves and get services by people who understand our mission and understand what we're trying to do, so the recommendations that come out from those individuals support our goals, support what we're looking for. So same thing if you jump from business now to a personal standpoint, that if you're servicing a vegan or vegetarian individual, you want to make sure that what they're looking for, we offer services for them as well. If you're going to be doing T-shirts, as an example, do you use bamboo shirts? Are the T-shirts organic? Say, for example, I make T-shirts. I'm going to want somebody from a manufacturing standpoint that generates shirts that I can use, because I'm doing the design. I'm not physically making the T-shirts. I want a partner who understands why I want A, B, and C types of T-shirts, because they align with my ethics as a business. So I think it's stretching the idea of what that final product is and understanding that consumers are demanding something that really meets their requirements all around.
That's very interesting, this idea of stretching what it means to have a vegan service or a vegan product. And you actually have a vegan job board where people can look for vegan jobs, mm-hmm. and people can also post their resume. And I noticed that a Montreal optometrist posted his resume. And this was very interesting to me because it raised the question of promoting vegan entrepreneurs or professionals or business people or whatever, whose work has actually nothing to do with veganism per se. And you were referring a little bit earlier to an accountant, and I guess that could fall under that category. But I've got a bit of a story to tell for this one.
Okay.
So my partner and I were looking for a real estate agent. So I decided to ask around Facebook to see if there was anybody who knew a vegan real estate agent, because I figured, well, we have to pay the commission, so why not support the vegan community, right? Absolutely. And it actually wound up turning out very nicely because with respect to what you were saying earlier about how this vegan real estate agent understood our needs as vegan, because they tend to give their customers a gift when a transaction is completed. And she gave us a gift certificate to the local vegan gourmet restaurant, which another real estate agent who wasn't vegan probably would have given us a gift certificate to a restaurant that we couldn't eat at or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So it really did serve our needs.
Yep.
But that wasn't really what I was thinking about when I wanted to hire her. It was really just I wanted my commission to support, you know, air quotes, the vegan community. But we actually got quite a bit of backlash about that, because some of our friends were kind enough to pass our request along through Facebook, and they got ripped a new one by one of their non-vegan real estate agent friends who declared us vegans a whole bunch of snobs. And to a certain extent, I get where they're coming from. And the thing was, when I first came up with the idea of hiring this vegan real estate agent, I was like, wow, you know, I'd never really thought about this before, but I'm going to set up a whole list of all the vegan professionals in the area and tradespeople as well, so all vegans can support their vegan brethren. But now in the aftermath of that, I'm not so sure that's a good idea. So again, that was a long story, but can you offer any more thoughts on this issue of promoting vegan individuals whose line of work really has nothing to do with veganism per se?
Yeah, I think it's very important. The reason being is we refer people all the time. So we refer people for different reasons. So I don't think there's anything wrong referring someone because they are a vegan real estate agent or optometrist, like you said. The big one for me a lot of times is a yoga studio. Studio is a great example for me where the product isn't vegan because yoga is just yoga. But I love finding people who are vegan behind it because not only does it ensure that any of the products that they use in the yoga studio, you know, to clean the mats, anything that they're using like the soap and shampoo, that stuff is vegan. And same thing with optometry, you know, where say there's something wrong with your eye and they're going to give you a prescription to something, it can be very difficult to go to someone who doesn't understand the vegan lifestyle and they recommend a product for you that is not vegan. And in many cases, there's a lot of different things that you can use for cures, but you just really have to ask people, you know, is there a vegan option to it or does it have, you know, XYZ, and then a lot of times our naturopath, even here, will do that for me. He's not vegan, but because he understands we're vegan, he'll give me a recommendation. But I bring that up to say that's why it's important to patron, that's why it's important to explain and recommend these businesses, because it can be difficult that every time you go somewhere, you have to keep asking the question, is this vegan, is this this, is this that? You know, it just doesn't make a comforting environment if anytime you go somewhere, you have to ask 20 questions.
So returning back to the issue of supply and demand, is there any niche out there that some savvy vegan could fill that you've noticed there's just no supply for this big demand?
I don't know. You might have stopped me on that. Because the example I always think about was like the shoe industry was always a tricky one for vegans because first came out were the shoes that were the comfortable shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're one that likes to wear heels, if you're one that wants something that goes with your XYZ outfit that you're going out on the weekend, you know, you don't want to wear like earth shoes to the club. And I completely understand that. So people really struggled with how do I get vegan shoes that match my entire life? So I'm trying to think, you know, what's a good example that's similar to that. I mean, pocketbooks and purses, really some amazing companies out here that have done a really good job of giving like comfort ones and colorful ones and cutting edge ones and so forth. So I think that industry is doing really well. I would say maybe music's one of those industries. Music's a very good example of an industry that's not necessarily vegan per se. But the topics, I mean, music is often an expression of people. It's also a way to get people to think differently, to drive change, and so forth. And I think it's a great medium that we haven't had a ton of amazing vegan artists in that type of area. And I think people are starting to do that and trying to do that. And it's also a hard industry to crack into, so I don't want to underestimate what it takes to be successful there. But in music, even in the arts and so forth, I think there's a great opportunity in there to get the message out and at the same time be successful. And because of industries like that, things that spin off from it, you know, a lot of things when you do from a music standpoint, you know, you're going to make DVDs, you're going to make bags, you're going to make T-shirts, and it starts to spin off into other product offerings where you can not only get your message out, but ensure it carries your ethical practices. So maybe that's one that pops top to mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I've noticed that as well, where a bunch of recent documentaries that have been made have really been making more of an effort to capture mainstream audiences.
Yeah, and I think that's a really cool industry when you think about like film and media, because that hasn't, I mean, documentaries were always like, okay, yeah, those people who watch documentaries. But, you know, I think Forks Over Knives, and not just Forks Over Knives, I mean, there's been so many new movies that are coming out, you know, like Vegetated and so forth, where people have really taken the message and put it out there in a way that people can consume it easily. It's encouraging, and people really walk out interested in driving change. You know, some movies, they move you emotionally that you're really, like, upset, and sometimes you have to work through that upset feeling and then figure out what can I do next.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think a lot of movies have been coming out lately that have given people a positive feeling afterwards and have inspired them to drive change and do something different in their environment and lean towards veganism, plant-based diets, and so forth. And I think that is just huge, especially when you think about like an industry that, I mean, 5 years ago, I don't think I ever would have believed that, you know, we would have a movie that promotes plant-based diet physically in the movie theaters, you know, where I can like walk down the street and buy a ticket.
Are you talking about Forks Over Knives?
Yeah, when that came out, when they were able to like actually be in theaters and not just be like the fringe DVD that we all tell each other to buy. Like you could actually, go. Like when I was living in San Diego, it was great because I could tell friends to go. I mean, I had seen Forks Over Knives so many times, it was crazy because it was so accessible that I could take people to it. It almost gave it a little bit more legitimacy because it was in the theaters, where they watch their other movies as well.
I noticed that you use the term plant-based diets, and I remember at the beginning of the interview you were talking about discussions surrounding whether you should use the term vegan. So, does that become an issue with many of your clients, whether or not to use vegan or the slightly more innocuous plant-based diets?
Absolutely. It comes up, and there's no like one way to go versus another. It always depends on what your product is, who you are, what you stand for, and so forth. But yeah, it comes up a lot on do I say plant-based? Do I say vegan? Even some people ask, do I say vegetarian? Just because even though your product is vegan, there's a lot of discussion about should I say vegetarian because the mainstream audience feels more comfortable with the word vegetarian.
Yeah, that's such a tough one though, because as soon as I see vegetarian, I assume it's got eggs or milk in it. Even though I read the ingredients and I can read that there's no eggs or dairy in it, it still makes me nervous because I'm like, if it was vegan, they'd have called it vegan.
It is. It's tricky. I mean, with targeting like vegans versus non-vegans, it's very different at times. I mean, as a vegan, I want to know it's vegan, like very clearly, loud and proud, put it all over the package. I love it. But for a non-vegan, sometimes it can't be all over the package. Like I had a great client I was talking with earlier, and on their website, they just kept using the word vegan. Everything they described was vegan. Every category of the products was vegan this, vegan that. And I was like, you might not need that as much. Even for a vegan, that may be too much because they were trying to make sure that people knew it was vegan. But when we started to talk about their product, this is another good example where their product wasn't food related in a sense, so you wouldn't think of it of having any animal products in it. That I was saying there's a delicate balance. Make it clear, put it on the bottom of every page. It's in the name of the company, so that helps. When you have the word vegan in the name of the company, that's a good tip that it is vegan. That may mean you can pull back a little bit in using putting vegan in the name of every single product and service that you offer, probably.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a really interesting thing. And then plant-based is tricky. I don't know how you feel about plant-based, but even vegans are upset with saying plant-based. And even people who they're worried about what the vegan stigma means and they want plant-based. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
I don't know. I reserve judgment. I think if what it is to enable people to eat a vegan diet or live a vegan lifestyle without worrying about the baggage that comes with the term vegan, more power to you. I worry a little bit because plant-based could mean mostly plants.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I think with everything has pros and cons. As long as you understand, if you're trying to figure out how to name your business, if you're trying to figure out how to position your business, you understand what those are and you're willing to take on both of those sides, then it's okay. And at some point, I mean, just like anything in life, I think a lot of times I think where people struggle, especially as an entrepreneur, is they have to take that leap of faith. You have to believe in what you're doing. And I think that's what makes a huge difference between just a traditional business owner and someone who's just saying, oh, well, I'm going to do this product because I know there are vegans out there and they'll probably eat it. Between really doing something you're passionate and you believe about, and take that leap of faith that what you do, what you think is important, is something shared by others. When I say take that leap of faith, I don't mean invest like $200,000 of your own money. I mean, let's do it in moderation and let's do it at the scale that you're at. But at the same time, I think you do have to start with a product, start with an idea, start with a concept, start with two or three. I get into discussions with people all the time where they want to come out with this like huge line of products, or even if it's something basic like food. If you're going to come out with food, come out with two or three products. Sell it locally. Sell it at your, farmer's market. And just make sure, are people willing to buy it? Are people coming back and buying it again? Are you finding if you have two or three products, is one product doing better than the other? And can you understand why? And I think thinking of things in a little bit more of a scalable standpoint is, I think, where you can become a sustainable, healthy business. If you can do two or three products successfully, then you might be able to do 10 products successfully. If you've never ran a business before, never managed or did anything before, launching 10 products may not be the place to start. 10 products nationwide is probably not the best place to start.
Well, we are just about out of time. I'm going to pass it over to you just for the last minute, just to maybe cover any topics that we forgot to cover or let people know where they can get more information on opening a vegan business or running a vegan business.
Absolutely. I'd probably say two things just from being an entrepreneur or thinking about starting your own business. If you're thinking about doing it, really make sure you spend some time planning and talking to other people, collaborating. We have such an amazing group of people who are vegan and veg out there. So if you're thinking about getting started, whether you give us a call or whether you just jump on Facebook and talk to other people who have done it before or talk to your friends, I think it's such a great way to get started. And I encourage people to think about aligning your business and your career, whether you want to start your own business or whether you want to work for another vegan business. It's great. I'm huge on the idea of vegan professionals. So think about it and think of maybe making that walk to that lifestyle that may mean working on weekends for a vegan or veg business, you know, maybe making that transition. But I think there's a great opportunity. I think it's exciting. And I also think there's something to be said about making that type of commitment. As far as what we do, what we try to do is do a good mix of offering some free services and some things that are in reach for people who are starting out, or maybe a little bit cash strapped. So we do stuff like free webinars once a month. We also do a lot of training classes online. I get so many emails in a day of people just asking questions. I try to get back to all of them, and I don't get back to everyone. I wish I did, but I try to answer as many questions, and we do emails and all that good stuff. And then we also do stuff, like I mentioned before, we do the one-on-one consults. We can do a marketing plan, like a six-month marketing plan, and walk you through that. And then we also have fun services, like our job board that we talked about earlier, where, you know, it's free to post a job if you're a business, and if you're looking for a job, you can find jobs, you can post your resume, and all that stuff's free. So we try to do as much as we can on both sides so we can help. And at the same time, like I said, you know, practice what I preach, where we can become a sustainable business. So we hope to be as much of a resource as we can, either directing people where they want to go or what they need. And I think in the end, just make sure you follow your dreams, follow your passion, because I'm so happy and so fortunate to be able to live my dream. And I thank the vegan community for that. It's such a wonderful blessing. And I hope that others consider doing it and are willing to take that leap as well.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie. That was really interesting. And now I want to start a vegan business.
All right. Well, it was wonderful being here. I appreciate it.
Animal Voices is produced from CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines and broadcast since 1996 on CIUT 89.5 FM, the University of Toronto's community radio station. Thank you to the whole Animal Voices team. If you have comments, questions, or show ideas, please email us at animalvoices@gmail.com. I'm Erin O'Sullivan. Thanks for listening.